big show for you here today. It is our latest installment of Teams That Will Shape the Draft. Justin Boone joins me to talk through some teams who are thirsty for skill position players. They need some help at running back. They need some help at tight end. They need some help at wide receiver. Maybe all of the above. We got the Saints to talk through. We got the Titans. We got the Commanders, the Vikings, the Patriots, the Giants. All these teams could use a little more juice on offense. We break them all down. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball because our guy Justin Boone is back. He took something that I believe people refer to as a vacation, time off. I'm deeply looking into what that is. I'm investigating that. But Boone, it's good to have you back, buddy. We got a big show. You're looking good on the other end of this call here. You're looking good, my friend. What's going on?
Feeling rested, feeling good. Appreciate you saying that. And I mean, there's only a few times a year where we can like guilt-free actually get a week off. And there's like that one little spot between free agency and the draft. And I did sneak a week in there. So yeah, feeling really good. Feeling excited to talk more about these teams leading up to the draft, man, because we're only a couple weeks away here from the NFL draft. And then once that happens, we are getting into the heart of fantasy draft season. So I'm excited.
No doubt about it. I'll tell you what, man, I would not have been able to guilt-free take away time last week from, you know, charting BYU games or North Dakota State, you know, Bryce Lance going against Mercer or whatever. Okay, so, you know, that I'm happy for you, though. I'm glad that you got some time away because we got a big show here to get into, and I need you in top shape for this one because it is our latest Teams That Shape the Draft series. And this one, we're doing a deep dive on teams that are thirsty for skill position players in the NFL draft. Here are the ones we are looking at today. The Washington Commanders, the New York Giants, the New England Patriots, the Minnesota Vikings, the New Orleans Saints, and the Tennessee Titans. Boone, this group is a little bit more, it's a little less easy to define, whereas the last week's episode with Scott, it was like, okay, we're looking at contenders. There's betting odds behind this that we can take a real look at. But I do think that when you look at these teams here, all six of them need help at the skill position spots and like really need a playmaker in this year's NFL draft at some level here.
And most of them have made a ton of moves. So I look forward to you rattling off the moves that these teams have made because they're clearly out there trying. They're trying to improve. And yeah, I'm curious. There's a few situations and sort of one thread that runs through a few of these teams that we're going to talk about today in terms of potentially a running back going in the top 10 and where he might go and the fates of the other backfields that either get him or don't get him and what that could mean. So yeah, there's a lot of interesting scenarios that we're going to have to go through with these teams fantasy-wise here.
Yeah, the other trend here is that four of these six teams pick in the top 10. So not the draft necessarily that's going to be flush with playmakers in the top 10, but they are all potentially looking at one, if not two guys that might go in the top 10 picks here. Yes, one of them, of course, is Jeremiah Love, whose name will come up multiple times on this here podcast. But as Boone mentioned, we always start looking at these teams by going over their list of offseason moves. And I'll just pull back the curtain for the listeners and the viewers here. If you can't tell, I'm a little congested right now. Spent Sunday, you know, with the niece and nephew and all their little friends doing the Easter egg hunt. So I'm sure one of those little germ bombs gave me something. So I'm a little congested here. And it's going to be tough to read off some of the additions that the Washington Commanders made here via NFL.com, because my God, they made a ton of them. So let's all take a deep breath and go over the additions that Washington made, starting with quarterback Marcus Mariota, re-signed on a one-year deal. Running back Jerome Ford also signed a one-year deal. Jeremy McNichols was brought back on a one-year deal. Running back Rashad White signed a one-year contract. Deami Brown is back with Washington after a one-year stint in Jacksonville. He signed a one-year deal. Treylon Burks was brought back on a one-year deal. Remember, he had that really cool catch that one time for Washington. Van Jefferson Another wide receiver also signed a one-year deal. Tight end Chig Okonkwo signed a three-year contract. Laremy Tunsil signed a two-year contract extension. Offensive tackle Foster Sorrell signed a free agent deal. Offensive lineman Nick Allegretti signed a two-year deal. Offensive lineman Trent Scott re-signed with the Commanders. Offensive lineman Andrew Wiley re-signed on a free agent contract. Chris Paul, offensive guard, re-signed with the Commanders. They brought in four edges. Kalavon Chaisson, Charles Omenihu, Adafe Owe on a big fat $100 million four-year contract. They also brought back Dietrich Wise as well. Defensive tackle Tim Settle signed a three-year contract. Linebacker Leo Chanel signed a three-year deal. Cornerback Amik Robertson signed a two-year deal. Cornerback Akella Witherspoon signed a free agent deal. Nick Cross, the safety, signed a two-year deal. Safety Jeremy Reeves signed a contract extension, and they re-signed both their kicker, Jake Moody, and their punter, Tress Way. So, busy offseason for the Washington Commanders, and if you can't tell, they're definitely looking for help at running back and wide receiver after all those names I led off there. And yes, indeed, team needs via mock draft database wide receiver, running back, edge rusher, and safety. So they made a lot of additions at those four positions, Boone, but they're just kind of filling out the roster additions. I think they're still clearly looking for another wideout and another running back somewhere along the way. So busy offseason for Washington so far.
Yeah, absolutely. And for our fantasy purposes here, like, not the most exciting additions, at the skill positions. They're trying to find something cheap there. They're trying to see if a guy can maybe emerge. Rashad White has had his moments in the past for fantasy, but I don't think he's a long-term starting option. I think he's a guy that could be a short-term starter for you. He can handle that role. But like we saw last year with the Bucs, he got an opportunity to start, and then the longer he was starting, they started to work in Sean Tucker, and I think that's just the nature of it. Rashad White is a better, pass-catching guy. He's not really somebody that you want to put your whole backfield on his shoulders. So I really think they're hoping that Jeremiah Love is going to be there. But is he going to be there, Harmon? Right. I think there's a bunch of teams in front of them. And not to spoil it, but we're going to talk about the Titans. We're going to talk about the Giants. I think those teams are very hungry to get him and will be very excited if he's there for them as well. So I don't know that he's going to make it to the Commanders. And you look at what they've done. They've filled out the room, and they've done it in the same way that they kind of did it in the past when they had Chris Rodriguez and Jeremy McNichols. And then they bring in Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt. Right. And they have this kind of three-way committee that gets the job done, that has some games, but overall doesn't really add that much value in the backfield, where a guy like Jeremiah Love, now that makes this offense that much more exciting. That takes a bunch of pressure off Jaden Daniels, who in his rookie season was fantastic. Last year, bunch of injuries derailed things for him there, but was it also maybe that sophomore thing where we see a lot of quarterbacks in their rookie year, they come out hot, and then when defensive coordinators have a full offseason to scout them, now it's not as easy in year two. I think there might have been a little bit of that going on last year, on top of the fact, like you brought up, that they're looking for that second receiver. They need another pass catcher, and Brandon Ayuk is the name that is just sort of penciled in, maybe even put now in pen, that he eventually will end up there. It seems like that's going to be the case, but it hasn't happened yet. And outside of Terry McLaurin, it's not a lot of pass catchers that you feel that excited about in this offense.
No, and obviously when Terry was hurt last year, it was pretty bleak in that passing game because, Debo had a couple of moments, but he's a guy that's a very limited player at this point in his career. They did some good stuff with him, like moving him into the slot more than he ever was with the San Francisco 49ers, and obviously I think that helped Debo. But yeah, on the perimeter, I was saying this on the pod in the summer that, they just did not have enough on the outside opposite Terry McLaurin, and that became a real problem once Terry got hurt. Right now, if we don't assume Brandon Ayuk is on the team, and even if Ayuk is on the team, obviously he is a complete and total wild card. I think you'd have to acknowledge that is the case here. Yeah, I mean, for sure, he's obviously a big wild card. But regardless, if he's not on the team, yeah, I still definitely don't think like Treylon Burks and Van Jefferson or any of these guys, are solidified, useful players on the outside, like our true number two receivers, which I don't know, Boone, like how does that change your calculus with a guy like McLaurin? Because obviously offensive coordinator David Blau, when he took the job, came out and said like this offense is going to revolve around getting Terry McLaurin 10 targets a game. I always say that's an easier thing to say in February than it is to do in September, October, November, December. But I am pretty optimistic about the structural changes that this offense is going to undergo here. And I think if everything comes together the way I'm imagining with Blau as the offensive coordinator, I can get myself pretty excited about this team in year three under Jaden Daniels. And that obviously dovetails into McLaurin as well.
Yeah, like having a quarterback like that can absolutely lift all boats. We talk sometimes about these different quarterbacks, guys that are just kind of, they need that environment around them in order to succeed. I think Daniels is certainly somebody that can make the players around him more viable for fantasy, no doubt. Mm-hmm. But you look at how the last 2 years have gone, right? Last season, it was just bad news. And it was kind of similar for McLaurin and Daniels in terms of having injuries when they were out there. It wasn't kind of the same production that we saw the year before. We weren't seeing like the real spiked games from them that we saw 2 years ago. They never got into that rhythm. For McLaurin, though, it's easy to forget this, that 2 years ago, wide receiver 14 in fantasy points per game. He had a great season, really went off, finally had that quarterback. Can he get back there? Absolutely. So I think he's somebody that maybe right now, you know, you look at him and you hope that the ADPs kind of around this team continue to fall a little bit. I just don't know that they've fallen to the point where I'm overly excited about these guys, because Daniels right now is going off the board as the QB3 in a lot of best ball drafts. You have to take him in like the sixth round. McLaurin, the wide receiver 23, but you got to step up and take him in like the end of the fourth round. Like, that seems like a high price to pay for two guys that are coming off of down years last season. So I think for me, that's part of the problem. I want to get invested. Yeah. I want to be excited about this offense like we were 2 years ago when we were saying go out and get Jaden Daniels. He was one of those late round quarterbacks that we were trying to target. And now you look at it and you go, okay, we kind of need a few things to fall into place, including in this backfield, right? Where JCM, he finished the year strong. He did. He had some big games, especially in the fantasy playoffs. Overall, it was a very weird rookie season for him. If they don't get a Jeremiah Love, I might be back in on JCM, because like you look at it, you figure, I just don't think that Rashad White's that guy. I think it's going to be a committee. And last year when it was the committee with Chris Rodriguez, and I mean, Jeremy McNichols being there, I think he's an afterthought. He really didn't get that involved as the season went along last year. Jerome Ford, I don't think he's a serious contender. I think he's more of just a veteran addition for depth. So JCM could actually emerge from this as a winner, but it all comes down to whether they end up getting Love or not. I'm curious. I haven't seen a lot of people connecting any receivers early with the Commanders. Like, if we don't see Love fall there, do you think they could potentially go that route and try to address that second receiver spot by taking one of these early guys that we like?
Like a Carnell Tate at 7, I think would interesting. Yeah, I totally hear that. And I think for me, what's really interesting, and I guess what I'm imagining, people are not making that connection in many mock drafts because everybody assumes that Ayuk is on the team. And I think if you're adding Ayuk here, you're hoping that he is your number two receiver, or even like a 1A, 1B with Terry McLaurin. But as we said, he's a complete wild card. So I'm assuming that that's why people aren't making that connection. Like, if they turn in the card for Carnell Tate, which, by the way, he might not even be there. He might go 6th overall to the Cleveland Browns. And I don't necessarily know that there's, although my God, can you imagine actually if we ran the clip earlier of Chigakonkwo, the free agent tight end, saying that when he was added to this team, David Blau showed him a lot of clips of Ben Johnson's offense, like, which again has been my longstanding theory that's the guy that they want, or that's the offense that they want to emulate. They're going to move away from a lot of what Cliff Kingsbury had put in place the last 2 years and go to more of an under center, true like Ben Johnson type of offense. Imagine if they did take Mekhi Lemon 7th overall. How many like, oh, is this David Blau's, you know, Amon-Ra St. Brown role player, like run that all back from last off season? I mean, now that you bring that up, and I do think that like there's a part of me, Boone, that thinks this draft is just going to be a little wackier than people imagine because there's a real lack of consensus and there's a lack of blue chip talent. So, you know, I don't know, maybe there is a scenario where they say, hey, Terry McLaurin is our true, you know, X receiver on ball vertical guy. We need someone to move around the formation. Could Mekhi Lemon be that player? I'm open to that idea. I hadn't even really considered it before.
And even they're not the same player by any means, but talking about that connection and the Lions offense and could they emulate that, that makes me even that much more excited about Chigakonkwo as a potential sleeper, right? Like, He's a guy that you look at this offense, and I know we're changing coordinators and all that, but Jaden Daniels was loving throwing to Zach Ertz. He clearly had an affinity for that. Ertz was putting up good stats. Even last year, early in the season, when Daniels was out there most of the time, Zach Ertz, tight end 14 in fantasy points per game through the first 13 weeks. And that's an old version of Ertz, where Okonkwo, he's had some moments for the Titans. He just hasn't really been featured enough. I think I could get behind him as like these guys that sometimes pop up at tight end, these like tight end twos, these deep guys, they go even undrafted in fantasy drafts. You get them off the waiver wire early in the season. They put up a big touchdown total. They start to take on a bigger role in their offense than expected, maybe. And the next thing you know, they're a low-end tight end one. So I could see Okonkwo getting in that mix as well. So yes, there's a lot of reasons, I think, to be excited about what this offense could be. But I could tell you the exact same story going the other way. Like I could say, okay, what if they go out, they think Ayuk's the answer. Ayuk shows up. You know, 2023 was the last year that he did anything meaningful. He shows up, he's not the same player. Now they've flopped. They don't have that second, you know, pass catcher. Okonkwo's not what I think he's going to be. He can't step up and be that de facto number two guy. And all of a sudden we end up with this offense where, you know, maybe they don't get love. And now what are they doing? They don't have these exciting new pieces. And we're just kind of, you know, cherry picking, going after McLaurin, hoping that he has like a Chris Olave type season from last year where he's just getting a ton of volume and puts up a big season on it. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of the other pieces in this offense aren't coming through for fantasy.
Just real quick to double back on the Chig Okonkwo point. You know, I think something that Nate and I have talked about over the years is how Ben Johnson was really creative and how he, even though Sam Laporta is not a true inline tight end, and I mean, people think he's this great blocker because he went to Iowa, but you actually have to, like, he's more of a movement blocker type, get him slicing across the formation, stuff like that. Sam Laporta is 6'3", under 250 pounds, like he's 245 pounds. Chig Okonkwo is listed 6'3", 238, so definitely smaller than Laporta, but not that far off the physical dimension. So again, there's a proof of concept of this offensive tree, but it's all theory, right? With David Blau, this is a guy who's, he was elevated from assistant quarterback coach. Like, that's a big jump here. So I think the way we can wrap this up on the Washington Commanders here, Boone, and I do agree that the Jeremiah Love thing, I'd love it to happen, but it's probably a pipe dream. I think he's going to end up going to one of the other teams we're going to talk about here.
Yeah.
But even so, like, there's enough ambiguity here that you can't lock in, like, this is one of the offenses you want to be invested in. But sometimes when there's ambiguous situations, there's profit. And that's why, as we sit here in April, far away from when we have to write down in pen what our takes are going to be this year, why I've been so interested in this Washington Commanders team, because I do think there's reason to think, like, if they hit the high end of their range of outcomes, they could be one of those offenses that we look back and be like, man, we should have been higher invested into that unit.
Yeah, I mean, we were in on them 2 years ago. I think we were excited about the potential for them last year, and the injuries just kind of screwed that up. So I was hoping, like I said, that the ADPs would kind of reflect that down year. I don't necessarily think that they are enough, but we'll see what happens in the draft, and then we'll go from there.
All right, let's stick in the NFC East and talk about the New York Giants here for our next team. This is what they've done this offseason via NFL.com. Fullback Pat Ricard followed John Harbaugh over to New York on a 2-year deal. Wide receiver Calvin Austin signed a free agent deal. Wide receiver Isaiah Hodgins was brought back, re-signed with the Giants. Wide receiver Darnell Mooney signed a 1-year contract. Wide receiver Gunnar Olszewski re-signed with the Giants. Tight end Isaiah Likely, another Baltimore to New York Giant convert. He signed a 3-year deal with the New York Giants. Jermaine Illuminor, their starting right tackle, re-signed with the team. Evan Neal was brought back as an offensive lineman, probably a depth piece. Lucas Patrick signed a 1-year deal. Offensive lineman Aaron Stinney re-signed with the Giants as well. Linebacker Tremaine Edmonds signed a 3-year deal. Linebacker Cam Jones signed with the Giants. Linebacker Micah McFadden re-signed on a 1-year deal. Cornerback Greg Newsom signed a 1-year contract. Safety Jason Pinnock signed with the Giants, as did safety Ardarius Washington. They also signed kicker Jason Sanders and punter Jordan Stout. Team needs, according to Mock Draft Database, linebacker, wide receiver, safety, and running back. Let's start with the running back thing here, Boone. There's just been too much smoke around the Giants' interest in a running back, whether it was Ken Walker in free agency or some of the reporters like Jordan Ronan at the NFL Scouting Combine talking about them potentially being interested in a Jeremiah Love type of player. There's just been too much smoke to completely write it off in terms of Love being the fifth overall pick to New York. So that's definitely, I think, on the board for a team that I think ran out of playmakers pretty quickly in New York last year once Malik Nabers went down and then Cam Scadaboo went down as well. I think they definitely want a little more pop this year, as we can see from some of their offensive additions.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting they brought back Devin Singletary, which seemed kind of strange to me. I didn't think that they would necessarily, you know, bring him back and restructure his deal or however they did that, because I thought there was a good chance they were going to go after a running back. Maybe they still will. Maybe I'm not saying that Singletary is going to be the reason that they're not going to try to take a running back early. I definitely think they're in the mix for Love, but it also just comes down to Cam Scadaboo's injury, right? And it seems like he should be ready for the season, but being ready for the season and being 100% and being back to form, those are two different things, right? So for Scadaboo, like, everybody remembers terrible injury, tibia fracture, ruptured deltoid ligament, a dislocated ankle. Like, there was a ton of things that went wrong. Now, the timeline does have him back and ready, and he should be available for week one, but he's going to be that same player. Is he going to be able to play the same way that he was playing last year when he was putting up great fantasy points, getting a ton of volume? I mean, RB6 in fantasy points per game over those last six outings there, was getting that bell cow usage too, right? 22 touches per game over his final four starts. Is he going to be ready for that kind of volume? And is he going to be as efficient, as productive as he was last year? I don't know that I can feel confident about that. And we're also, for as big of a story as he was last year in fantasy and real life and, you know, the personality and everybody loving him, he's still a day three guy. And there's a big history of day three running backs who come out, do something exciting in their rookie season, and then whether it's injuries or something else that pushes them down the depth chart and kind of sets their career off in a different path and one that's not great for fantasy. So I'm a little bit worried about that. But at the same time, if it's Love here, Scadaboo, all right, he's way down, he's off the board, he's a backup, and we're all in on Love. If it's not Love, though, what are you doing in this backfield, Harmon? Because at that point, I don't know how you're not in on Scadaboo, because unless they go out and get another running back in one of the other rounds, and we know after Love, not a lot of running backs in this class that you're going to be overly pumped about, you know, coming in and taking over a starting job, you know, being more than just a committee kind of back. I think I still will be in on Scadaboo if they don't end up taking Love early.
Yeah, it feels like Cam Scadaboo, by the time the sixth pick comes around in the first round later this April, we're going to know whether he was a winner or a loser from the NFL draft when we do like winners and losers exercises post round one. Because, yeah, I don't know that there's another back in the draft that they would add. And because I know the Giants are just they're a weird team, honestly. I'll just admit this off the top here, that they're a team that I don't quite have my finger on the pulse of like how good they're going to be. I think there's been a lot of turnover here. Obviously we talk about John Harbaugh. He was speaking to the media today, and I believe he said that Cam Scadaboo is like ahead of Malik Nabers in terms of when he's going to be ready. So that's good to hear, but you know, he's coming off a major injury. Is he going to be 100% the same player? He's a tough guy to get a read on. So I think he could be somebody that I'm interested in, but there's also the Matt Nagy hanging over all of this too. Like, that doesn't get me excited from an offensive coordinator perspective. So I think I could be mildly interested in Scadaboo if they don't come away with Jeremiah Love. But you brought up the point about how good he was in fantasy. I think I've made this point previously. Like, they weren't necessarily like a great running team, like from a production standpoint, from an efficiency standpoint, when Cam Scadaboo was getting all that volume and everything. So there is something to that. I don't know if it's everything, though. It's obviously a small sample.
And I think we're burying the lead here, because the thing that I really want to talk about is the Malik Nabers injury. And I updated my rankings, a new redraft rankings for April came out today. They're up on Yahoo. People can go check those out. I was surprised. I have Nabers way lower than everyone else. I am down in like the wide receiver two range, because I don't think this guy is going to be 100% to start the season. I think the way he's talking, that, you know, I'm not coming back, he's thinking long term about his career and he's got to feel right before he comes back. And then the moves the team made, it's not just about what they're saying. It's going out and getting Isaiah Likely at tight end, a pass catching tight end, and Darnell Mooney and Calvin Austin and a bunch of guys. Yes, I know, not necessarily like the biggest needle movers, but they're addressing that receiver position, I think, because they're preparing for Neighbors to potentially not be available early in the season. And I've seen some other people rank him in the top 10. I've seen some other, like, I don't think he belongs there at all. I don't know that this guy is going to be right early in the season, if even when he does get back out there. So that's a concern to me. I think that's something that fantasy managers should be taking into account. When this guy is healthy, when he's himself, absolutely has a chance to be the number one receiver overall, certainly top five at his position. But I don't think he's going to be healthy this year, Harmon.
I'm with you, man. And, you know, you mentioned this. And look, like, when we get into August and training camps happen and stuff, obviously we can revise our opinion on these things. But, you know, Harbaugh said today that Neighbors is on track to be ready, quote, closer to the season. That doesn't mean, like, yeah, he's going to be participating all offseason. It's a new offense, too, by the way. And I want to say two things about this whole Neighbors thing. One, it's a new offense. They've added a lot of these, you know, interesting players like Likely and Darnell Mooney and Calvin Austin and these guys. None of them are big high target getters necessarily or anything like that. And they still, by the way, could take Carnell Tate, fifth overall in the NFL draft. I think they probably will take a wide receiver at some point. And it's a deep class of guys on, like, the second day. Even into the third day, there might be some interesting options there. And again, if it's Tate, that's a totally different ball game. If they take him fifth overall and make him kind of, as I said with Trevor Sikkema a few weeks ago, like the T. Higgins to Malik Neighbors is Jamar Chase long term. But there were times in the Brian Daboll offense where I was like, they're not even running an offense. They're running like a Malik Neighbors fantasy usage scam. Like, they're just getting him the ball at all costs, even if it's not good. Like, it's not good offense. They're just targeting the hell out of the one guy who's good on this team, especially in 2024. I don't know how sticky that stuff is, even though Neighbors is a guy that you could throw the football to 180 times in a season when he's right, and you could feel justified in doing that because he is that good. But that's my second point here. I think Neighbors absolutely should be thinking long term. I mean, I know the Giants are playing kind of footsies with Odell Beckham right now, but the specter of the Beckham kind of thing here should hang over the heads. Odell Beckham was on, like, a Hall of Fame trajectory when he was at the peak of his powers with the New York Giants, and injuries ruined that guy's career, okay? And if I'm Neighbors, I'm sitting there thinking, like, I'm not trying to be a what-if story like Beckham is at this point, where he's 34 and, like, please get me back onto a roster because I made this sick catch in flag football. Like, no, I'm trying to have a real Hall of Fame career. 100% he should be thinking about his long-term durability more than just, can I get back on the field and catch some passes in Matt Nagy's offense?
Yeah, in one of my deep dynasty leagues, Harmon, I have to admit that I picked up Odell Beckham off the waiver wire.
Oh my God.
Oh, it's that bad. It's like 34-man rosters, like, it's that kind of league. But that's the desperation sometimes in those dynasty stashes. But I do wonder if there is going to be, just to turn it to more, you know, actionable for fantasy, is there going to be a bump potentially to anybody in this passing game, whether it's, you know, Isaiah Likely getting more volume early in the season, which I certainly think is possible. Or whether we see a guy like, you know, Mooney, or, you know, Odell Beckham pops up for something early in the season, a few games. Like, Mooney's just 1 year removed from having almost 1,000 yards, 5 touchdowns, yeah. Like, absolutely terrible last year, and he had all the opportunity in the world and it never came through. But he's a guy that we've seen do it before, at least. So he could be somebody that, you know, has some games early in the season while we're still either waiting on Neighbors to get 100% or waiting on him to actually get back in the lineup. So we'll keep an eye on this one for sure, and we'll monitor all these. I'm going to do an article soon going over just my thoughts on all the injuries, just the, you know, star players who we're looking at coming back, and kind of, you know, what we're projecting for them, how I'm valuing them this season. So I'm going to be working on that, and I'll give my thoughts in there. I think that's going to come out next week. But yeah, it's certainly, this is a big one that I just don't think people are paying enough attention to, that Malik Neighbors, for how exciting he is, for what an incredible fantasy player he is when he's been on the field. I just don't know that he's going to be out there early in the season, or I don't know that he's going to be 100% in himself if he is.
Just real quick before we go to break, what's your level of confidence, like, with the Jackson Dart experience right now? You know, because this is a tough team to get a read on. They could come away with, like, a big time offensive player at the fifth overall pick, whether it's Jeremiah Love or Carnell Tate or something like that. But there's just a lot of mystery kind of surrounding this Giants team. So what's your, like, level of confidence on Jackson Dart right now?
I think no matter how the offense is called, I still think he's going to run a ton. And I don't think anyone will call as many designed runs for him as he was getting at one point last year. But he's just probably the kind of player. He's a gamer. He's going to do what it takes to win. sometimes that might be even foolish, you know, with putting his body on the line. So I'm still excited about him. I still think he belongs in that top 10. Maybe we won't have the, you know, top three kind of upside that we saw for a portion of last year at the quarterback position from him fantasy wise. But I'm still very excited about him. And yeah, I hope that they do take an offensive playmaker there in the top 10 for him, because then I think we could feel a lot better about him, especially with the Neighbors thing. But if Neighbors isn't available, and if Neighbors is not the player that, you know, he was when he was healthy, it will still take something away. But we saw Dart perform even when Scatabu went down, even when Neighbors was gone. Like, he just kind of elevates these guys and he keeps producing. So I still feel good about taking him. It's just with all these question marks around him, I don't know that we can feel that he has the same ceiling that he was showing at a part of last year.
Both of these teams could be really interesting offenses if everything comes together, Washington and New York. We're going to talk about more of those type of teams right on the other side of this quick break. We'll be back after that. All right, we're back. Next team we're talking about that is thirsty for some skill position player help. It is the New England Patriots, who have made some offseason moves, not quite as many as Washington, so no need for the deep breath here, but this is what the Patriots have done so far. Offensive lineman Elijah Vera Tucker signed to a three-year deal. Fullback Reggie Gilliam signs a three-year contract with the team. Romeo Doubs, four-year deal for the former Packers wide receiver. Julian Hill also signed with the Patriots. Offensive lineman James Hudson signed a one-year deal. Defensive lineman Draymond Jones signs a three-year contract. Linebacker KJ Britt signed with the team. Quarterback Kendall Vildor signed with the team, as well as safety Kevin Byard on a one-year deal. Team needs edge rusher, offensive tackle, wide receiver, defensive lineman. Of course, for our purposes, Justin Boone, that WR, according to mock draft database, is the big team need to consider here. And I think this wide receiver core certainly does still need a body added to it. The Patriots have a ton of draft picks here. They have their own picks in the first, second, and third round, but then they have a bunch of fourth rounders, a bunch of sixth rounders, stuff like that. Here's the question, Boone. Are they going to add one or multiple wide receivers in the NFL draft this year, or should we just all write in pen that AJ Brown is a member of the New England Patriots? As I speculated weeks ago, Daniel Jeremiah was on Mina Kimes' podcast, and this clip was making the rounds on Twitter recently, that, you know, he's basically saying, like, yeah, AJ's a Patriot and DJ's as plugged in as anybody. So are we wasting our time talking about the Patriots targeting playmakers in the draft when they're going to get a playmaker on June 2nd when his contract becomes much more tradable for the Eagles?
It certainly seems like it. I don't want to necessarily jump to conclusions and rank it that way, but all signs are really pointing to it. And I think it's funny that it almost seems like the Patriots are doing like the Bills wide receiver blueprint, but just like at light speed, right? Like, if you think about like Drake May's rookie year, Josh Allen's rookie year, like not having a ton of weapons, and then what's the solution? You go, you get Stephon Diggs, all of a sudden you have a little more success. Then Diggs goes away. You try to fill it by getting like these cheaper options that you're hoping you hit on a diamond in the rough. For the Bills, guys like, you know, Josh Palmer. For the Patriots, Romeo Doubs, who I don't think deserves to be the number one there. They certainly need to go out and get somebody else. And then in the end, what do you end up doing? You trade for a veteran receiver, the Bills, DJ Moore. And, you know, the Patriots, it seems like it's going to be AJ Brown. I'm not suggesting that is necessarily the right approach, even though I'm a Bills fan, but it's just weird that it like kind of parallels it a little bit there. I know Buffalo's had some failures along the way, the Keon Coleman pick and that sort of thing. But yeah, they need to find someone. And whether it's AJ Brown, whether it's taking a guy at the end of the first round, which I think if they don't get AJ Brown, they certainly should do. But if you look at that pick, like, Harmon, do we think that there's going to be a receiver there that's like worthy of that pick? Because I think there's a chance we could see six receivers go before the Patriots get on the clock there at the end of the first round. So I think that's something, you know, worth considering here. They absolutely need playmakers in the passing game, though. And we know, I think, it's going to happen one way or another. So we kind of have to wait, I think, to see, you know, how we can value this for fantasy. But they're going to have somebody regardless.
Yeah, I think if they don't come away with a wideout at the end of the first round, we can just go ahead and write AJ Brown in pencil there. And I mean, because they have an interesting room outside of a true number one, like, I think Romeo Doubs is a credible starting wide receiver in the NFL. I think Kayshon Boutte is an interesting kind of sacrificial X based on how they used him last year, but I think could be more efficient if he's moved around the formation. I still have some hope that Kyle Williams can be an impact player. Like, obviously Matt Collins is still there, but I just think the room looks a little, and I'm still skeptical about AJ Brown returning to elite form, but I think he can be like a guy that just slots everybody in appropriate kind of standing here in this wide receiver room, and then we kind of go to work there. I think it could look pretty good for Drake May and these guys if AJ Brown's the number one receiver here, and I also think they have enough on-ball receivers to kind of move AJ Brown around the formation, which would be really interesting. But yeah, I do think there's a chance a guy like Denzel Boston could be available at the 31st pick. Like, I don't know that he's everybody's cup of tea, but he's kind of a guy that if he's off the board, and I'm assuming Omar Cooper Jr. is off the board in this situation, like Casey Concepcion is not making it to the 31st pick. Jordan Tyson's a wild card because of the medicals. But yeah, I could definitely see like all those guys off the board by 31, the Patriots pass, and then they trade for AJ Brown on June 2nd, as has widely been kind of speculated here. But let's just kind of put wide receiver for like to the side here for a second. I do still think, like, you know, probably not at running back because they obviously added Travion Henderson last year. Ramondre Stevenson gave them a really good bit of games in the playoffs. I think maybe a tight end could kind of be added here as well. But yeah, they have a lot of picks in this year's draft, and I would be surprised if they don't come away with some guys who have some juice on offense, just kind of considering how they ran out of bodies last year.
I would agree. I wanted to ask you, do we leave the light on at all for Kyle Williams? I know he was somebody that, you know, I talked about last year, somebody that was sort of like a deeper dynasty guy. And it was partially because there was a lot of opportunity in that, you know, receiver core that maybe he could rise up the depth chart and turn into something. That never really happened. He had like one or two flashes last year. That's about it. Are we like still keeping the candle going for him at all, Harmon?
Yeah, I think you keep a little bit of a candle lit for him. Now, if they trade for A.J. Brown, like, obviously he's got a long way to go to climb the depth chart, and he probably at best could be the number three receiver this year. But I still think, like, he was a guy who was going to take time. His redraft ADP, like in early best ball drafts, was kind of crazy to me. Like, this is a guy who came from Eastern Washington, right? Like, he came from a very low level of competition. Like, I don't think he was ready to contribute as a rookie. He is more of a developmental guy. So it's tough for those players, by the way, Boone, because like, oh, you're a developmental receiver, guess what, you just never get the time to develop because you can't contribute early for a team that needs help right now. And then like, all right, well, we added AJ Brown, we added Romeo Doubs, you're not going to see the field in year two, and then year three, like, you've done nothing. So it just, this is the tough part with those prospects, is it becomes like a snowball effect, and it's just rolling down the hill, and you've never gotten the seasoning that you need. So long story short there, I do still have the candle lit for Kyle Williams, but if they trade for AJ Brown and they've added Romeo Doubs, I do think it's getting pretty thin in terms of his outlook this year.
And I'll be interested to see how this offense could potentially change. If AJ Brown ends up there, a guy who certainly I think would want to command a lot of targets, does that change things? Yeah. Because Drake May, not to continue to make Bills comparisons and Josh Allen comparisons, he's the same kind of quarterback where he wants to spread the ball around. They've had some success doing that. They haven't necessarily had to throw to one guy 10, 12, 14 times a game. I would hope that that wouldn't throw anything off. Like you're saying, AJ Brown, an aging version of him, maybe not, you know, coming to grips with the fact that he's not the same player that he once was. Could that possibly, like, you know, hurt the Patriots in any way? I think that's something to consider as well here. But I don't know. Do we need to even talk about the backfield for the Patriots? I mean, it's pretty straightforward. Do you want to discuss it?
We got a long time to do that. And I would just say on the AJ Brown thing, I think he is more interested in just getting out of Philly than he is in his target total. So I think he'll have that first year away from Philadelphia bump and be happy with, even if it's 7 to 8 targets a game as opposed to 10 to 12. But obviously that's famous last words when we're talking about some of these wide receiver ones. But let's get to next team here on the outline. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, maybe they could find an inefficiency in the market here where you just get these like kind of disgruntled receivers, but you just get them for 1 year before things go just south. So they do Stephon Diggs last year, AJ Brown this year. Who's it going to be next year? And just keep that going.
I like it. It's always good in the first year. It's just always, what's it like in year three, year four, everything like that. Okay, let's get to the next team here that we're going to discuss. Minnesota Vikings, their offseason moves so far. Quarterback Kyler Murray signed on a one-year deal. Quarterback Carson Wentz also was brought back on a one-year deal. Running back Aaron Jones signed a revised contract to return to the team. Offensive lineman Ryan Vandermark signs a one-year contract. Linebacker Eric Wilson re-signed on a three-year deal. Cornerback James Pierre, I liked this signing, signed a two-year deal with the team. Safety Tavier Thomas re-signed with the Vikings, and punter Johnny Hecker was brought on for a one-year deal. Safety, cornerback, defensive lineman, running back. Those are the top needs according to Mock Draft Database. I want to throw wide receiver onto this here too. And this is why I wanted to discuss the Vikings for this exercise, Boone, because I think we look at this team and we think, okay, Kyler Murray, he's getting the keys of the Ferrari. And I think that, you know, I've said this. I think you look under the hood of that Ferrari and it gets a little thin after, yes, Justin Jefferson, who is awesome. Of course, Justin Jefferson rules. Jordan Addison, not had a clean off-field record so far in the NFL. And then, yeah, you see that third receiver spot we're showing on the screen here? Ty Felton, last year's third-round pick, didn't really show us very much. Tight end TJ Hockenson, they barely wanted to bring him back. Running back Aaron Jones, they barely wanted to bring him back. Like, the Vikings don't have a ton of picks in this year's draft, but they have two third-rounders, so there is that. I wouldn't be surprised if they look at that defense and think, okay, yes, we could add some guys around there, but for the most part, Brian Flores has got us over there. And obviously, Kevin O'Connell's great, but this team is pretty fragile and pretty light at the playmaker spot. I think we could see several additions made to Minnesota from the offensive skill position spot.
You think early, though? I feel like more like depth guys, sure, like, you know, mid-round pick sort of thing. I don't feel like you think they're going to actually spend up high to get a guy?
First round, I just don't know if the board is necessarily going to be there, although I know right? that they've yeah. been, even with Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison, like when those guys were having great years, like I know I've talked to people that have been like, no, they really would love like a third receiver, like a third option, and they kind of had that guy. And, I mean, Ty Felton, when they took him, I thought I was like, okay, that was a little higher than I thought that was higher than Ty Felton should have gone in the draft. But also I could kind of see like that's a guy that they just want to like be able to spit the ball out to, because this is such a vertical passing game where they run a lot of deep concepts with Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison. They get him on like these deep in breakers on off zone coverage, off man coverage, stuff like that. They don't really have a guy that they, because Jefferson, you would be wasting him if you used him this way, just like a, hey, get the ball in the short area to him and let him run after the catch so that, like, we can get some easy free yardage here for our quarterback to kind of keep him on schedule. I think that would have helped your boy JJ McCarthy last year. I don't know if he was helpable, but if he was helpable, that would have been kind of nice to have a guy like that. Ty Felton just never really happened. Like an Omar Cooper Jr., if he's there at the 18th pick, could that be something that they look at? I think that would be a little bit of a luxury, and I don't know that they have a running back that would be good at 18th overall, because Jeremiah Love obviously is not going to be there. But yeah, I think on day two, they could add a running back. On day two, they could add a receiver at tight end if the guy is kind of right. I wouldn't be surprised if we see some day two additions that are interesting for us to consider in our dynasty rookie drafts for this team.
Yeah, I've really been looking closely at the running back class and potentially a guy going there for them. Like they pick 49th, 82nd, and 97th, I believe. And that would get you a guy for sure. It sounds like some of these running backs might fall even further than people are expecting in terms of falling deeper into day two. I could see them adding someone there because, yes, we've loved Aaron Jones for a long time. Not the same player. And like you said, it didn't even seem like they were going to bring him back until they restructured that deal yeah. and eventually did. Jordan Mason has had his moments, but I don't think he's the long-term answer in terms of being like a starter who's actually going to add something in the backfield. He's more of just get what's blocked kind of guy, you know, do the job when you need him. But again, one of these players that I just don't think is going to be your 17 game starter here. So I think they definitely could go that route. I think the receiver one's interesting. I haven't thought about that too much because I just keep coming back to, and I mean, stop me if you've heard this before. I've been known to talk up a Vikings quarterback for fantasy a little much here, and I'm not the biggest Kyler Murray guy. But I do think, don't you agree, that even Kyler Murray, who, you know, has been, I think, elevated in a lot of people's eyes because of what he's done for fantasy in the past, and maybe isn't quite the quarterback in real life that he is for fantasy at times, But still, I think he is a big upgrade from what we saw quarterback-wise there last year. So I think he is going to help things a lot. I think this offense is going to be these guys are going to be a lot more viable. Obviously, Justin Jefferson, I think, will have a bounce back year, right? And four of the six seasons that he's had in the league, he's had like at least 1,400 yards last year, down year for a variety of reasons, one big one. But we also have talked about how, you know, the offensive line kind of fell apart, and that was a big issue as well for them. So I think Justin Jefferson bounce back year coming. And then I wonder, like, before we get to, like, could they draft somebody, I just wonder, could Addison or Hockenson actually provide value here? Because Addison has had some decent seasons. And I think going into last year, you would have thought maybe he's somebody that could step up and have another good year. You look at, you know, the rookie season, 911 yards, 10 touchdowns. That was just a rookie. Second year, 875 yards, 9 touchdowns. Like, he is a playmaker. He's not necessarily a guy that's going to be the most consistent for you, but we don't need that for fantasy. I wonder if he's someone that, if things get a little better, if the quarterback plays better, could we see him have like a Jameson Williams kind of season where he flashes a little bit, and then all of a sudden, boom, now we see this guy put together a big year, over 1,000 yards, 1,100 yards, something like that. I think that's in play for Addison. I don't necessarily think they need to. And of course, the off-field stuff, we need to make sure that there's no issues there. He makes headlines for all the wrong reasons when he's not on the field. But I think he is a talented player, and I think he's somebody that just this offense overall, the quarterback play comes up even a little bit to average or slightly above average. I think it's going to be so, so big for all of these skill position guys. Hockenson would be a big long shot. I mean, he's going outside the top 20 tight ends, but he's also a guy that we've seen do it before, and he's not that old. He's not even 30 yet. He turns 29 this year. So I don't think it's impossible that we could see Hockenson even move up if they don't go out and draft somebody of significance like you're suggesting there. I think Hockenson is somebody just to keep an eye on, like, you know, real, real deep kind of. Now he's fallen into the sleeper range, but it wasn't that long ago that we were talking about this guy as a tight end one.
No, it's a good point. And yeah, he'd be, if he is on the team and they don't add another significant body, like, they're absolutely, like, he's going to finish better than tight end 20. You know what I'm saying? But, like, how much better is obviously the question. I take your points about Jordan Addison. It sounds like you're ready and willing to get back in on the Vikings bandwagon. And I kind of am too. Like, Kyler Murray obviously has his flaws, but, like, he's been about 18th in EPA per play the last 3 years, even playing in an offense that he didn't fit in Drew Petzing's system. And I think Kevin O'Connell has already shown history of being able to meet guys more in the middle when they're functional quarterbacks than what the Cardinals did the last few years. Like, I think this is going to go relatively well this year for Kyler Murray. And again, my last point just on this team here before we throw to break, Boone, we got to remember too that seemingly Kevin O'Connell may have won a power struggle with general manager Kwesi Adofo-Mensah. Obviously, he was pushed out. Rob Brzezinski, longtime team front office man, is calling the shots for the draft this year. They don't have an official general manager. But pick 18, like, could that be an offensive lineman? You mentioned the depth. Like, last year was a problem. Could they be looking at the future for Brian O'Neill, who's in, you know, kind of, he's not super, super old, but he's getting up there. And then pick 49, 82, 97. I just wouldn't be surprised if the head coach, who seemingly is going to come out of this thing with a little bit more power, just has his say of it, and they go offense, offense, offense at those the second rounder and the 2 third rounders, and we come away with a lot of skill position players added to the Vikings. So that is definitely on my radar as we head here to April, because I don't think the Vikings and Kevin O'Connell can I don't think Kevin O'Connell can survive another bad offensive season here. He's got to win a playoff game. Like, he's been there for a minute now, zero playoff wins. That's starting to become a chatter in Minnesota as well. But we're going to take our last quick break of the show. We have a couple other teams to discuss on the other side of this quick break. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. It's time to discuss, yes, my favorite team in the NFL, the New Orleans Saints. I've actually really not enjoyed the Saints the last few years, but you know this, Boone. I'm a certified shuckhead. I'm a big believer in what's going on in New Orleans right now. I'm kind of kidding. I just really think they're an interesting team and an interesting offense to discuss, because I don't think a lot of people will be into them. But I'm going to be potentially into this offense because They've had an interesting offseason so far, and I think they're going to have an interesting NFL draft. Here's what they've done in the offseason so far. They signed, I mean, what a lead in to that. They've had an interesting offseason. They signed Zach Wilson to a 1-year deal. They also signed running back Ty Chandler on a 1-year deal. Travis Etienne, that's the headliner, a 4-year deal for him. Noah Fant was brought in on a 2-year contract. David Edwards signed a big 4-year deal with the team to start at guard. Dylan Radunes signed a 2-year deal. And, oh my gosh, yes, I said Travis Etienne. It's Achan. Travis Achan. I screwed it up. 4-year deal. It's going to take some time, Travis. I'm sorry. I'm working on it. Chris Rumpf II re-signed with the Saints. John Ridgeway, defensive lineman, he re-signed on a 2-year deal. Linebacker Caden Ellis signed a 3-year deal. Safety Julian Blackman re-signed on a 1-year contract. Safety Terrell Burgess re-signed with the Saints. And punter Ryan Wright signed a 4-year deal with the team. Here's their team needs, according to Mock Draft Database. Wide receiver, edge rusher, cornerback, safety. Yes. This is one of the spots, Boone, where wide receiver is most fascinating to land with. Because, again, they have a young quarterback who played well last year. They have an established number one in Chris Olave, but they've got an opening for somebody across from him. Could that be Carnell Tate in the top 10? Could that be someone else on day 2? A lot of interesting options here for a team that plays fast, spreads the field. And right now, they would be starting guys like Mason Tipton and Devon Vele, who's interesting as the big slot receiver. So even tight end, Juwan Johnson, like I wouldn't be surprised if they had more like of an inline guy there. So a lot of pass-catching possibilities for this New Orleans Saints team.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, another like just absolute sicko pickup I made recently was Jalen Polk, who is now part of their team, and who, baby, Tyler Shuck actually was talking. Tyler Shuck was talking him up, Harmon, recently. Tyler Shuck out there saying that, you know, he's excited to play with them and all this stuff. So, hey, that is another one of those very, very deep stashes. I actually wrote a super deep dynasty stashes column recently a couple weeks ago. And, yeah, he was one of the names. They were, like, real, real deep ones. But he was in there. And, yeah, I think this all points
to them. Can I just cut in on that real quick? Can I just...
Sure.
I'm
shocked, but all right, go for it.
I'll admit, I did like Polk as a prospect, and I have just been flabbergasted by it. Well, okay, he has obviously not played very much, but I will say this, I will go to my grave saying this, that the Patriots coaching staff did not do him any favors by having him be like their vertical X receiver running a bunch of 9 routes. Okay, that just made like zero sense based on his prospect profile. But what also didn't make sense was that he was one of the better blocking receivers in the draft. And he was just had great hands, could catch everything. And guess what? His blocking stunk, and he couldn't catch anything for the Patriots either. So he definitely made his own problems. We're showing on the screen right now a photo that Tyler Shuck tweeted out of Shuck and Polk fishing together. We got a fishing buddies narrative going here for Jalen Polk and Tyler Shuck. Look at that. I mean, get him off your dynasty waiver wires, folks. Yeah, I did like Polk as a prospect and was really disappointed by how it went in New England.
But just to be clear, we are talking about a long, long shot in terms of him becoming fantasy relevant, but they threw it out there because we always have fun doing that. I think it's interesting to consider if they do go receiver in the top 10, and I think there's a good chance that they do. If they go receiver in the top 10, what does that mean for Olave, who had this great year last year, wide receiver 9 in fantasy points per game, the 6th most targets per game during the season, like just incredible volume. It's obviously would take a step back, right? If he's going to have a little more competition in terms of a first round wide receiver, then we'd have to dial him back a little bit, probably look at him as a more of a wide receiver 2, maybe even a low-end wide receiver 2 for fantasy. Still somebody you can invest in, but takes a little bit of the ceiling away from him if they're going to invest in a high-end receiver like that. And yet still, I think this offense is one that we are excited about, and part of it is the great coaching. Part of it is how well they competed last year, even though they had a talent deficiency, even though they were a losing team. And still, they fought week in and week out. That's a sign of great coaching, and that's the kind of team that you want to be a part of in real life and for fantasy, right? You want players that are going to continue to fight right till the end, who aren't going to mail it in the second half of the season when you're out of the playoff picture potentially. So, yeah, I think that's exciting. And if they do, Harmon, go with a receiver in the top 10, I know we're putting a lot of eggs in that basket here, but Tyler Shuck, like, right now he's going outside of the top 20 quarterbacks, going as the QB 21 in a lot of basketball drafts. I mean, this guy has the potential to be a low-end QB1. He's got the rushing ability. We saw him last year be very viable for fantasy in the second half of the season once he was starting. I mean, you give this guy a top 10 receiver, this could get very exciting very quickly in terms of his fantasy outlook.
No question. It would get really exciting. I think he showed us some rushing chops too. And we just like the way this team is coached. I'm a fan of a lot of what this coaching staff does. We love how they play fast. And I agree that Olave might take a hit if they take a top 10 receiver. And I do think I'm of two minds here, Boone, that I think Mekhi Lemon would be a great fit in a spread offense like this because he would get to play a lot of Z and a lot of slot, and he'd be on the field a ton because they use a lot of three receiver sets. He is smaller than their typical receivers that they've looked for. And like they traded for Jalen Polk on the cheap. They traded for Devon Bailey on the cheap, a couple of big wide receivers. They wanted Isaac Tesla in last year's class, a big wide receiver. Still, though, when they've broken those size thresholds, and obviously it's the same GM, Mickey Loomis, who's been there forever, they got Chris Olave and they got Brandon Cooks, two pretty good wide receivers when they've broken some of those size thresholds. But I don't know if Mekhi Lemon's their type. But even if they go in the second round for wide receivers and they do look for some of those bigger bodies, you know, it's more second day. Chris Bell, does he reunite with Tyler Shuck from Louisville? I know Chris Bell hated his quarterback last year. He probably liked playing with Tyler Shuck a little bit more. Elijah Surratt could be interesting as kind of a big slot convert. Malachi Fields, another guy that's more of a zone beater despite having the size. So a lot of interesting options for this Saints team that obviously got a big boost to the running back position. I know that they're still saying that Alvin Kamara, real quick, Boone, I know that they're still saying Alvin Kamara is on the team, but like, if you really listen to what Kellen Moore said, like it's like a tacit acknowledgement that he is currently a member of the New Orleans Saints. I don't think he's supposed to say when he's asked that, right? Yeah. Are you like baking him into your Saints projections at all this year?
I moved him back up a little bit, but I had him as like RB80. So I moved him back up a little bit into the realm of like, you know, guys who might play this year. But I am not really expecting him to be out there. I think he's just going to announce it on his own terms when he's ready.
I think that is right. Okay, we are going to announce that we're taking our last break of the show here. So that's going to do it for us on the Yahoo Sports Network. However, we're going to keep going live on YouTube. So if you're with us, stay with us there. And we're going to hit on the Titans on the other side of this quick break. We'll be back in just a minute. All right, we're back, and we had to save the Titans, Boone, for this little final mini section here, because guess what? I've got another long list of additions to read here. So this is what the Tennessee Titans have done so far this offseason. Deep breath. Hendon Hooker signed a one-year deal to be a depth quarterback and compete for a roster spot. So did Mitchell Trubisky. He signed a two-year deal to be the backup quarterback to Cam Ward, another Brian Daboll crony there. Michael Carter signed a one-year deal to join the team. Running back Julius Chestnut re-signed on a one-year deal. Wide receiver Lance McCutcheon re-signed on a one-year deal. Wide receiver KJ Osborne signed a one-year deal. And the big one was wide receiver Wandale Robinson signed a four-year contract to follow Brian Daboll to Tennessee. So did tight end Daniel Bellinger, who also joined the team. Tight end Kylan Granson signed a one-year contract. Offensive tackle Austin Delicus signed with the team, as did offensive guard Cordell Volson, signed a one-year deal. Center Austin Schlottman signed a two-year deal. Edge rusher Jermaine Johnson acquired in a trade with the New York Jets. Edge rusher Jacob Martin signed a two-year deal. Defensive lineman Jordan Elliott signed with the team. Defensive lineman John Franklin Myers signed a three-year deal. Defensive lineman Malik Herring signed a free agent deal. Defensive lineman Solomon Thomas acquired in a trade with the Dallas Cowboys. Linebacker Mohamed Diaby signed with the Tennessee Titans, as did cornerback Cordell Flott, signed a three-year deal. Cornerback Alante Taylor signed a three-year deal. Cornerback Joshua Williams signed a two-year deal. Safety Tony Adams signed with the Tennessee Titans. Kicker Joey Sly brought back on a one-year deal, and punter Tommy Townsend signed a free agent deal. I could have saved us all some time and said on offense, they added a bunch of dudes that Brian Daboll knew. And on defense, they added a bunch of guys that Robert Saleh knew. I could have just saved us all a lot of time by saying that, but yet those are all the names they've added so far. Team needs, according to Mock Draft Database, running back, edge rusher, linebacker, wide receiver. I want to throw it to you like this, though, Boone. Do the Titans, who are heavily rumored to take Jeremiah Love at the fourth overall pick, do they actually need a running back? Like, how desperate is the running back need? Or is this just a, hey, he's going to be the best player available. We're trying to help our young quarterback. We're taking the potential best player in the draft in Jeremiah Love at fourth overall.
Well, Tony Pollard is in a contract year. Tony Pollard is older. Tajay Spears, who we like and I think might be one of those guys that, you know, can step in and start for short stretches, as I keep referencing a few of those guys that are around the league, but maybe not somebody that you want to be your full-time starter moving forward. I think there probably is a need at running back here. Now, if you're this particular team and you're probably not going to be a serious contender this year, is running back the spot to go? I think we could argue that, but I get the idea of Cam Ward last year didn't have playmakers around him, and I think they just maybe want to take a little bit of the pressure off of him, whether that is taking Love at four, which, again, we don't know that that's going to happen for sure, whether that's investing in a receiver at that spot, which I think they probably should consider because Calvin Ridley is definitely on the wrong side of 30 and hasn't really done that much for them. And Wando Robinson, who I like, who we've talked about before, who I think is a nice signing, you don't necessarily want to go into the season with him as your number one receiver, right? If you're going to be a true, you know, contender, try to make it into the playoff conversation, you need to add something else at receiver. So this is a team that's a little bit of a blank slate. I like the coaching staff. I think they really hit a home run in terms of the coaching staff. So now, can they build on that? Can they add some playmakers in the draft? And can we turn this into something that's exciting? Because Cam Ward last year, I think he played better than the stats show, but he didn't have a lot around him to work with, right? Shamir Adike, kind of more of like a gadget guy. Alec Manners, you know, nice depth piece, but I don't think he's somebody that you really probably want starting in your offense, or, you know, nothing more than your third receiver, let's say. So all of a sudden, if we do get a playmaker, whether it's running back or receiver in the top five there for them, this gets a lot more interesting. I hope that they do that. I don't know for sure that they're going to, because spending up on a running back when you're at this stage of what's essentially a true rebuild, I don't know that I really want to spend that kind of draft capital on running back, but it really seems like there's a strong chance that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, Peter Schrager of ESPN, obviously throughout his first mock draft of the season, he had the Titans taking Jeremiah Love, saying, quote, "I just don't think the Titans will pass on Love." Okay, let's live in that world. That the Tennessee Titans take Jeremiah Love. We showed the offensive line earlier on the depth chart there. Some interesting pieces. It's so funny too. Like, J.C. Latham is not that, like, he's not that old. He's been on the team for just a few years, and he's a pick of a previous general manager, and like a couple coaching staffs ago too. Because that's what happens here. It's Tennessee. There's so much damn turnover all the time that, like, a lot of these guys, like Calvin Ridley, he's only been with the team 2 years. Tony Pollard, only been with the team 2 years. A totally different general manager gave those guys those big ass contracts. Okay. So, like, that's just what's going on with this team. It's really hard to find, like, who's committed to who. Obviously, Ridley was barely brought back. They adjusted his contract, and obviously it makes some sense. We'll see what happens. He's coming off a major injury, but we're looking at this ecosystem boom. Let's say they take Jeremiah Love. He's the consensus 101 in non-Superflex Dynasty leagues, maybe even in Superflex Dynasty leagues as well, depending on what you think about Fernando Mendoza as a fantasy quarterback. Are you going to be nervous about an Ashton Jeanty Raiders deja vu situation here, or do you think it's going to go better than that?
I mean, I continue to remind everyone that Ashton Jeanty over 1,300 scrimmage yards and 10 touchdowns as a rookie. So though there were a lot of down games and it might not have felt like it the whole season, he didn't have that bad of a rookie year. And you look at what Tony Pollard's done here, and people have varying views on Tony Pollard, but over 1,200 scrimmage yards each of the past two seasons. I know it's a different coaching staff, but they've had their struggles during that time, and Tony Pollard was able to produce. So I think that he could still have a good outcome fantasy-wise. I do think we would bump him down a spot or two in the running back rankings if he ends up going to Tennessee. I don't know if that's the right move, because I think he's going to get a ton of volume, and I think he could still produce like we've seen Pollard produce in this offense at times. But I just think it's bound to happen. I think the public perception, if he goes to Tennessee, people will just be a lot less excited than if he ends up with the Giants or with the Commanders. And then on the flip side, if Love doesn't go there, I think Tony Pollard all of a sudden becomes a lot more interesting for fantasy. Like, you think about like last year what he did, and also assuming that Brian Daboll gets a little more out of this offense this year, which I feel confident saying, I think this is an upgrade in terms of the coaching staff there. Pollard finished pretty strong last year, at least 95 scrimmage yards in four straight games down the stretch. The eighth most fantasy points among running backs during the most important time of the fantasy calendar, which was the fantasy playoffs, plus the week before, week 14 to week 17. He was going off. So if they make some upgrades here, if they don't get Love, Tony Pollard all of a sudden becomes this like weird value in a contract year, still trying to get it done. So I'd be willing to invest in either of these guys, whether it's Love, whether it's Pollard. I will take them. I definitely will. And I think that we will get a potential discount on Love if he goes to Tennessee, like I said.
It's so funny. I remember talking about this. I think it was probably with you. I mean, it's probably with you at some point during last year that there was the Titans last season. They just were like one of the most useless fantasy teams we've ever seen. Like, you could barely start anybody on this team. And that included Tony Pollard until then he became the guy you needed in the fantasy playoffs. And like, how many Tony Pollard teams even made it to the fantasy postseason? Who knows? It was a bizarre season on offense for Tennessee last year. I do think getting Wandale Robinson at wide receiver will just help. I mean, obviously, Wandale, is he going to get 140 targets again? I would be shocked if that happens. I think that also means that something went wrong with some of their other wide receivers if that comes to pass. But the other thing, too, is just like he's going to give Cam Ward some layups. So he's a slot-based player. He will be a slot-based player. And this team under Brian Daboll, and I have my qualms with Brian Daboll's offense from like a long-term perspective, but I think in year one, it's going to be pretty good. So if he's established as the Z slot, mostly slot, I think we can look at guys like Io Manor and Ridley and say, Boone, that definitely on day two, probably not Carnell Tate at the fourth overall pick. I think that I wouldn't say 0%, but I think it's unlikely. But day two in the draft, if a Denzel Boston slips or just like a nut one to their pick in the second round, that would be perfect. I think they're looking for a big body perimeter, high volume receiver. And there are some guys that could be available at their second overall pick.
Yeah, I think that would be a really interesting way for this to go, right? Take Love fourth overall, solidify the backfield, get this guy who now you can build the offense around, who can be that sustaining back and a star and a playmaker for you. And then at 35, like you said, early in the second, go take best player available at wide receiver and try to infuse a little something into that receiving core and give Ward another weapon there. And then all of a sudden, Harmon, guess what? Maybe the Titans wouldn't be in your segment, games no one's talking about. They basically became like the mascot of that segment last year. Yes. I think it got to the point where you weren't even talking about them anymore. You like banned them from being in that segment. I had to eliminate them.
Yes.
Yeah. So it would be nice to see them spend a couple picks early at the skill positions and go along with this coaching staff and some of the other ads they've made, like Wandale Robinson. And all of a sudden we have something that's, a little more palatable for fantasy than what we were dealing with last year.
Functional. I think that's what we're shooting here for Tennessee is like, let's just get to a functional offense, because there were certainly large portions of last year where they were absolutely not that. And yeah, I definitely think could they even be a team that looks at Chris Bell? It's like a long term, he's not going to be ready to play probably early in his rookie season, not be ready to contribute, but because he's coming off a torn ACL from December, so he's going to miss a lot of the offseason, everything like that. But like, could they get by with Ridley and Io Manor and these guys on the outside? And then second half of the year, Chris Bell is catching some crossers from Cam Ward and running with the football in his hands. I could see that. Plus, he's drawn like AJ Brown comparisons. I don't agree with him being like an AJ Brown type of player, but that the owner is still burned on the AJ Brown trade. So, hey, maybe it all comes full circle for the Tennessee Titans there.
You've mentioned Chris Bell twice now. Is that because is he your next guy after that top six? Is he, because I've moved him up to that spot. I don't know if it's so much that I'm totally in love with him as a prospect as much as I'm not totally in love with like the rest of the receivers after that. And there's like a bit of a drop in that tier. But do you bring him up? You brought him up twice today. Are you bringing him up for that reason? Or are you getting excited about him?
Yes. I'm mixed. I think there's a pretty significant drop off after the top six guys. I think we're all in agreement on who those six players are. And then it just gets very pick your flavor. And I think we've talked about a lot of teams that need kind of more of a perimeter outside, bigger body. And there are guys that are available there that are bigger body players, like Surratt, like Malachi Fields, even Chris Brazel. Some of these guys we haven't talked about yet, some of them that we will talk about on the next show later this week with Ray Garvin in part two of the wide receiver prospect preview. But some of those guys, I would say, can't really play X because, and Brazel, you know, he's a high upside guy, but, you know, he's developmental coming from the Looney Tunes offense. I guess so is Chris Bell in a way is developmental too, because he's a risky prospect. He's very boom bust. So I don't know like how excited I am, but I think if you're looking for somebody that has the skills to survive at X whenever he is ready to play, I think he has more of those traits than guys like Surratt and Fields, who I like, but probably need more role catering than a guy like Chris Bell, if that makes sense.
All right. I was just curious because you mentioned him a couple times, and it's not a name that necessarily gets brought up as much as the top guys. But to hear you mention him a couple times there, I thought it was worth pointing out. I will also say, bringing it back to the Titans specifically, Gunnar Helm is one of these like deep, deep tight ends that I think people should pay attention to. Last year, came in as a rookie. We talked about Chig Okonkwo, who was with the Titans last year. Helm immediately carved out a role. We saw him like, you know, sneaking through the cracks. He caught at least four passes in four of his last seven games. Had a pair of top 12 weekly fantasy finishes in there as well. He went 6-for-51 in one game, 4-for-49 and a touchdown in another. So he's somebody that I think, you know, depending what they do in the draft, I don't think they're going to take anybody that's going to play over him. I think he's probably going to get a chance to start here. And he's one of these guys that could kind of come out of nowhere and become fantasy relevant, because tight end just has those guys basically every year pop up. And it's just a matter of whether you can hit on the right one. And I think Helm is somebody that people should at least keep in mind. Keep him on your watch list. You probably don't have to draft him in normal leagues. Keep him on your watch list. He could be somebody that we're picking up in the first week or two because he's stepping up.
I think the moral of the story here is that by the end of the NFL draft, if they play this thing right, if they get some of these skill position players that they're looking for here, we could be a little bit more interested in the Tennessee Titans in 2026 than we were in 2025, which low bar to clear since the interest level for large portions of the season was stone 0%. So low bar to clear, but it is possible. Boone, great show with you, buddy. Appreciate you for doing it, of course. What are you working on this week other than your hype articles for the Jalen Polks of the world?
Yeah, no doubt. So like I said, redraft update went up today. I'll have the rookie rankings update for all the, you know, people doing their dynasty rookie drafts before the actual NFL draft, which is a very fun thing to do. I recommend it.
Bad idea.
But you can check out that. That'll be up this week. And then I'll have a full update to all the dynasty trade value charts. I took the week off last week. We're the start of a new month here. I got to get all that stuff updated first. And then we'll get into all the content they're doing leading up to the draft here over the next couple weeks.
Boone is back. Boone is grinding. We love to see it. Yeah, dynasty rookie drafts before the NFL draft, that's true sicko behavior. But, you know, as I always say,
it's wild.
We say sicko. We say sickos lovingly around here, so it is a term of endearment. Great show from Justin Boone today. We will be back on Thursday as Ray Garvin is back for part two of the wide receiver prospect deep dive. Yes, we have a ton of names to get into. We got through, yeah, those top six-ish guys. We've got a ton more players to discuss. The Surratts, the Fields, the Antonio Williamses of the world. All that is going to be live right here at 2 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. Until then, we are out.